Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know. You can find the club online at commonwealthclub.org or on Facebook, Twitter, or our YouTube channel. I am Piper Kujak, manager of the club's new headquarters building and chair of tonight's program. You can find out more about the club's future home also on our website, including how you can support the project. Tonight's program is part of the 2015 Platform Series titled Music Matters, sponsored by Ernst & Young and the John and Marcia Goldman Foundation. It is my great pleasure to introduce tonight's program, Beyond the 13th Tone, with Mauro Fortissimo and Dean Mermel. Not Marmel, Mermel. When painter, sculptor, musician, and poet Mauro Fortissimo placed an old piano on the bluffs of the San Mateo coast in February 2013, played it for 2 weeks, and burned it, a lot of people noticed. Filmmaker friend Dean Marmel joined forces with Mauro, forming the Sunset Piano Project, which began installing and deconstructing pianos at select outdoor locations in the Bay Area. On the heels of their Flower Piano Project in Golden Gate Park, Mauro and Dean will talk about their work and play a liberated piano in concert with a prepared piano in the style of John Cage. Sunset Piano is a collaboration of these two multidisciplinary artists interested in promoting piano culture and community in an increasingly digital world. You can find out more about Dean and Mauro's work at sunsetpiano.com. And now, please welcome Dean Mermel and Mauro Fortissimo.
So good evening, everybody. Thanks for coming. Thank you, Carl and Piper, for inviting us to join this excellent month showing what music is about. My name is Mauro Fortissimo. I see a lot of familiar faces here, but for those that don't know me, I was born in Argentina. I came to California, we say, in 1981. I live in Half Moon Bay with my wife, Carrie Hollister, and six cats now. We run a yoga studio down there. We're both working artists, painters, sculptors. I also play the piano. She plays the piano really well, too. So welcome one more time. I would like to actually tell you how we met. Actually, Dina and I met through a dear friend of us, Pepe Ozan. Did we meet in Burning Man? I think we did.
Actually, I think I met you one day when Pepe, who is an amazing sculptor as well, and kind of a community arts impresario, was working on something at the Box Shop, which is this location in Bayview Hunters Point. And when you showed up, you were in a suit, very much like you are now, which is highly unusual for you.
Yeah.
And I thought you were a gangster.
Yeah. I got the accent for it.
Yeah, yeah. I totally thought you and the people we were with were gangsters. I don't know who you were with.
I can't remember.
I never saw you in a suit again until tonight.
That was about, 10 years ago or so.
A long time ago. Yeah.
So anyhow, we would like to dedicate this presentation to our dear friend Pepe Ozan, which is no longer with us, and another friend of us, Gustavo Rabin, which also is no longer with us, and he was always very supportive of all these things we do with pianos, and he always told me to aim higher. I'm actually wearing his jacket tonight.
But he was not a gangster.
I'm going to talk briefly
about
the Sunset Piano beginnings. In 2013, somebody gave me an upright grand piano. I usually take pianos that don't longer work, and I take them apart, and I play the insides like this. And if they're actually not working to be playing the inside, I make sculptures with the parts. I had so many pianos that I didn't need another piano to be taken apart, and I decided to take it down in front of the water in Half Moon Bay, where I live. I run a yoga studio with my wife in Half Moon Bay, and play for a couple of weeks. My original intention was to play the same piece over and over for a long period of time, at least a month, if I could, record it, and show, in a way, the impermanence of things. The piano was progressively getting out of tune due to the proximity of the water. I was playing the same piece, which was an arabesque by Robert Schumann. Unfortunately, after 2-3 days, City Hall came down and I didn't have the proper permits and they kind of closed me down. But they gave me 2 weeks to continue with this idea of a project, which I did. And one day there were 20 people, another day there were 100, and the next day there were 1,000 people there. It just became this thing. I call it virus, but I guess the right word is viral online. and also TV tracks and newspapers and radio stations. So I got a lot of track with that. So after doing that for a couple of weeks and finishing actually Valentine's Day, we decided to do one last session with this piano. I played the piano while I set it on fire. And it was a cremation ceremony. It was saying goodbye to a beautiful instrument that basically wasn't working anymore. So that was the idea. I don't burn pianos. I love the instrument, but it was a fitting thing. And it did get a lot of attention because of the burn. People ask me nowadays, hey, when are you going to burn another piano? Well, I don't do that anymore. But anyhow, when I did that, the next thing occurred to me, hey, one piano got so much press, let's do 12 now. And when I started doing that the same summer throughout the San Mateo coast, I got together with Dean and said, hey, Dean, what do you think? Let's do this. And he said, if you do it, let's film it and come out with a movie, a film, a document. And that's how Dean came in to join me in this thing, which is what it is now. Maybe Dean would like to talk about a bit more about the 12 pianos. Yeah, that was the same summer, 2013.
That was on 2013. That was just a few months. I mean, I think you burned the piano in mid-February, and we started talking about this in April, so it happened pretty fast. And I came down to Half Moon Bay, and we started talking about it, and pretty soon it started looking like a large project. It started looking like, okay, we're talking about 12 pianos that we're going to hide in the bushes and hills and trees of cliffs and beaches of San Mateo. And it's going to be kind of epic. And I want to film it and show the story and the continuity of the idea and how it developed. And I had a sense that it was going to go somewhere beyond just being this installation of 12 pianos that some people might find and some people might not find. So we both realized we needed money to do this, and and so I did a Kickstarter campaign. And the thing about Kickstarters is and crowdfunding campaigns in general is that if you do it correctly and you're very diligent, you not only get the money that you might need to do a project, but you also start building a community. And this element of community started becoming very, very important to our work. So within a very short time, we had 500 people that were supporting the project, and some of them sent $3, and some of them sent more. And it became a very exciting thing. Every day I would go on there and go, okay, well, we've gotten this together, and we have this idea for this piano here. And it started becoming an interaction. And that feeling of interacting with people started to percolate through this whole project, where it was no longer just one guy or two guys doing a project that was cool. You know, not that there's anything wrong with one or two guys doing a project that's cool. The world needs things like this. But it became, people were interested and people were interacting with us. And that kind of energy has followed us through this whole project since then. Yeah. So, after we got enough money together,
the Kickstarter campaign was successful.
The Kickstarter was actually successful, yeah. We're happy to say. Yeah. And then we had a party, and had this huge party. We got very drunk. And the next day, we put a bunch of pianos in a truck and started taking them out to all these outrageous locations. And we're going to show a clip in a little while from the film that I've been working on about the project that shows you some of the things we had to do to get the pianos into the locations that we had to muscle them into. It was pretty epic. I didn't do any of that work. I held the camera. But
we had a lot of friends helping pushing and pulling pianos.
Some good
friends.
Yeah.
So I want to mention one thing too, that we kind of tried of getting permits to do this, but it didn't work. So I'm a creative guy, so I came up with a looking alike permit with a lot of stamps on the and seals of governments and agencies.
Yeah.
It looked really good unless you call one of the agencies and they didn't know anything about it.
Surf rider.
Oh, God, it was the Well Foundation, which
State
I made
Parks.
Up.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Costa
Commission. So anyhow, we didn't mean this in any disrespect. We actually put a little disclaimer in small letters that they weren't permits. They were organizations that we really supported and we're happy to mention. So that got us off the hook.
That got us off the hook.
Yeah, somehow, actually, for a couple of weeks, I was hiding a bit from the law. The funny thing is, though, that a year after that, we actually got invited from the county's Santa Clara County Parks to do pianos with all the permits and their blessing. And the year before, they were going up and down after we stole pianos and taking pianos away. They actually, when we put 12, some of them lasted only 2-3 days. The state parks or whatever organizations, they took them away.
Another thing that happened is that we started to. There's already a whole cadre of amazing musicians that live in Half Moon Bay around where Mara lives, and some of them are here tonight. And of course, we featured those people. But then other people started hearing about the project and saying, hey, can I play? And some of these people were really good. For instance, a Steinway artist named Laura Downs contacted us. She just heard about it through some
Facebook
way
something.
On the internet, and so we scheduled her to play, and we scheduled other amazing people to play, and so we started playing with this kind of performance idea, but it's very informal performance. It's not like here's the audience and here's the performer. It was more like a musical environment that we created. And we started experimenting with that around the time of this project, Opus 2. And that developed further as we went on as well.
We were lucky that the person from San Francisco, Ellen Parker was her name. She also is a piano player. She actually went down and saw me when I did the first installation. But didn't have a way of contacting me. And eventually she met a friend of yours, Michael's, can't remember her name. And through her, basically, we met one day in Half Moon Bay, and she said, hey, would you guys would like to do it in downtown? Well, it was a quite different environment, but we did. We got a grant from the Office of Economic Development in 2014. We had it again this year. Our home base is the Tenderloin District, which is Market and 6, actually. So compared from, plain and beautiful Half Moon Bay for whales and dolphins, we came to a different environment. However, the experiment keeps going in the sense whenever we take a piano to a location, it seems that the piano creates a space. There's something that happens by the piano being there. People come around. And that's something that we're kind of learning about lately, that especially with the gardens gig, we created an environment just by taking the pianos there. So in 2014, we brought, I think, Sansa Piano Opus 3 to San Francisco. And the beginning of that, actually, was an interesting event that we did with our friend, which is here, Brian Goggin, did an amazing installation of 13 pianos, believe it or not, which are hanging on Market and 9, actually, it's 9th and Market on 9th Street.
Yeah, it's an installation called Caruso's Dream, which is 13 steel and glass pianos that are substantially bigger than these kinds of pianos you see here, mounted on the side of the building. It's a really impressive installation. So for the opening of that installation in February of 2014, that was kind of our first big
launch
into the city, where we had this arc of 12 grand pianos being played, each one played by an amazing musician, in an original piece composed by a composer, Veronica Krauss from Los Angeles, while aerialists descended from the front of the building, which is a very tall building, and a marching band, an extra action marching band, played for the finale. It was an epic, epic, epic event.
Yeah.
also just rolling the pianos through the streets on their special carts was an interesting sight. It was really very, very
in a way, that was how we started in San Francisco. It was an installation actually by Brian Goggin and Dorca Keane, which go by there, and if you go at the sunset hour around 5:36, well, in the summer later, there is a sound. If you have a radio, I think it's 90.1 or so, you could hear Caruso singing, and inside the pianos have lights, and they go up and down.
What's that frequency, Brian?
90.9. And you could hear 28 songs of Caruso as you see the lights going up and down. Anyhow, thank you, Brian, for actually inviting us to join you there. And from then, we went downtown. Actually, we do have a storage, thanks to the Shorstein family or foundation, family, I guess, Market and Six. We have a storage where we put pianos. We keep our pianos. So what's that mean? Keep going,
that
keep
means,
going.
That
keep
means we got to keep it going.
I got to keep it going. Okay, so Opus 3, and then Dean, after Opus 3, starting looking around. Okay, now I think it's your turn to talk.
I thought that would never happen. Okay, all right. So so that was in 2014, and then around the beginning of this year, 2015, I started noticing, and people have always been posting things on Facebook saying, oh, look at this piano in this train station in London. Oh, look at this piano in front of the metro in Paris. Oh, look at this piano in the park in Portland. And we're like, dudes, you know, I mean, we're doing the best we can, you know. But we also felt like, okay, here's San Francisco. It's a world-class city, and we're a little bit behind in the piano race. And we wanted to. I got this idea to put pianos in Golden Gate Park. I mean, it's a perfectly good park. We're just the people to do it. And so we proposed the idea to Sarah Ballard at Department of Rec and Park, and she thought it was a great idea. And a couple days later, she called me and she said, "Well, you know, actually, it's the." And I thought she was going to say, "Let's not do it right now." But what she actually said was, "The Botanical Gardens," which are contained within Golden Gate Park, and if you've never been there, it's an incredible place, are celebrating their 75th anniversary this year. And the Botanical Gardens are the perfect place for you guys to have your pianos. And we went, yeah. So we started meeting with the good people. The Botanical Gardens had an incredible collaborative experience with all of those folks, and came up with a date and started working toward that. And we, this summer, we just finished it, July 9th through the 20th, we had 12 pianos all through the gardens of the Botanical Gardens of Golden Gate Park. It was an amazing experience. It was an amazing experience for a couple of different reasons. One, the whole thing was big, but it was still small enough to be contained within an area. So it wasn't just pianos scattered here and there, and it would be like a random thing. You could actually experience a different person at each piano playing a different kind of music and have a completely unique experience at each piano. So we programmed the pianos with different performers, different amazing piano players, and most of the time the pianos were available for anyone to play. We're going to show you some slides of that event as well. It was a great exercise in community, and the thing that we discovered in doing it is that we had created something totally unique. We created an interactive music festival. If you Google interactive music festival, you don't find anything. So
not yet.
Not yet. But this is like something that we didn't even know we were doing, but somehow all these things came together to do that. And I can talk about more of that.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to, but it was in a way.
We should show that.
It was dissolving the boundary between performer and audience. And that was just a beautiful thing. There were lines of young kids waiting to play. Yeah, you'll see. So
we need to keep rolling. So,
yeah, go ahead.
So, Will, are you back there? Okay. Roll them. Yeah. We're going to show you a short clip from the film 12 Pianos. And then that'll go into a slideshow of flower piano at Botanical Gardens.
get calls for free pianos all the time, and well, nothing is really free. You know, I mean, yeah, they give you the piano, but the sucker weighs 800 pounds. Doing a show a while back, and I was burning a piano. Some people got upset and they asked me, hey, why don't you donate that to a school? Well, the schools don't want pianos. I just got 10 out of Oakland. Pianos are getting out of commission. You don't see them around anymore. I mean, the other day I read the New York Times, they were throwing pianos away to the dumps. Actually, that's really, that should be against the law. We're going to install 12 pianos at select locations along the San Mateo coast. I mean, look at here, dude. I love to just have this view and play.
This piano project for us to enjoy one last gasp of San Francisco culture as I really remember it and know it and have been a part of these larger productions in the city that are rapidly disappearing and being gobbled up, eaten up, destroyed, and I'm losing my sense of bearing in the city in that way. I really love this city and all the old San Francisco has to offer, and still hopefully can continue to find some way to do that.
So Will, just keep it going. Don't pause it. So so that was a little taste of what happened. And then this is Flower Piano from this year. Some installations in Golden Gate Park in the Botanical Gardens. There were a lot more people than we expected, and that was great because we were expecting that maybe there'd be some beautiful private moments, you know, someone would discover a piano and sit down and play a little Chopin. But we didn't expect to see lines of people holding their sheet music, impatiently waiting for their turn on the piano. And that happened again and again and again, especially on the weekends. It was great to get there early. I used to get there early every day, around 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning, and either uncover the pianos if they weren't already uncovered, or just kind of make sure the pianos were all functioning right, run scales on them and see if any keys were sticking, stuff like that. And there's nothing quite like sitting at a big white grand piano in a meadow, that one, playing for a bunch of geese slowly making their way across the meadow in the fog. It was the most amazing experience. So there were this mix of moments that were both very, very private and personal and almost spiritual, and also, this was a couple that he proposed to her there, and she accepted, clearly. So it was this mix of things that were both private and also were very performance-oriented and sharing-oriented. So it broke down these boundaries of performance and audience. This is something that you hear, for instance, Burning Man talk a lot about is no spectators. This was a no spectators kind of experience too. It was, even though sometimes somebody would be playing and people would be listening, there was a dissolving of boundaries between those two things. It was no longer so easy to see where a performer ended and an audience began because people were so thoroughly sharing the experience. So we saw that music is really something that builds community, and this is the direction that we're headed more in now, and we want to do more events like this that really, because a piano is something that brings people together. It creates, it has a sense of gravity and place, and people tend to gather around them and share around them, and that's why we love this instrument.
Hello. We're going to play a piece that I wrote a couple days ago. It's a nocturne. I got my part. Dean has his part.
You sure we didn't mix these up?
No, I think it has your name on it. It says Dean Spanish.
Oh, yeah, you're right. This
yeah,
is mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because we got it confused the other day, and I was playing his part. He was playing mine. It didn't sound as good. One thing I'd like to mention before we start this music section, this is a grand piano. It's a 7 feet grand. It's on the side, obviously. It's prepared with different things, with brass tubes. I make well sounds with this. And I will show you when I play. I have fish lines here, which I pluck and I do different things to it. I use conductor batons, which I made out of a fishing pole. It's just a little tip and a cork. Because it's really flexible, the conductor buttons are really stiff. And another thing that happened to this piano, and some of the pianos we use, they're tuned to 432. Unlike most of the music being played today in orchestras and all the pianos, which are 440, which is a standard tuning.
That's concert A 440, which is, on a normal piano would be here.
Yeah, not in that one. it was a tuning established, taken internationally, I don't know, 1950-something. We find 432 to be a bit more resonant with the natural environment. There is a lot of information to read online, and you're welcome to do it. It will take a long presentation to talk about that. But we do tune to 432, and when we play it, see how you feel. It's just a bit calmer. It's just, and that 432 means 432 hertz, which is vibrations per second. So that's so much about this I call the liberated piano. Why is liberated piano? It's liberated as the physical construction of the mechanism. So I'm going to show you one quick thing. Hopefully we do it in 20 seconds. An upright piano, I remove these out of the way. It's liberated for its mechanical construction. And by doing so, we cannot get away from the 12 tone. And that's the idea of this presentation tonight, beyond the 13 tone. Actually, it's beyond the 12 tone, but yes?
Oh, well, we've been saying it's beyond the 13th tone because there's 12 tones in Western music. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. But the 13th tone we like to think of as the heart. So that's the reason we called this presentation that.
Yeah. As being the heartbeat, is very basically, it's an individual thing. Each one of us heart is sounding differently. Anyhow, this is going to be a quick premiere of 433, which is a piece written by John Cage in 1958, and it's 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence. I'm going to skip the 4 minutes. I'm going to do only the 33 seconds. And it's a radio program, so if you hear on the radio, say, what is going on? It's silence. So, yeah.
So listen closely. Well, that was a good one. Maybe, there it is. So this instrument is a prepared piano. We were talking about John Cage a little bit, who was the name most people associate with a style of music called minimalism. And John Cage championed this way of working with pianos, where if you look closely here, you'll see there's different screws stuck in here between the strings. There's a kind of rubber tape that we have along this part of the middle section of the piano. And washers, different things like this. These are methods of preparing a piano, where you can turn a piano into an instrument that maybe it was never meant to be originally, but you kind of start making music on your own terms this way, and it becomes a much more percussive instrument. So I'm going to be playing this instrument, which was once a piano, and Mauro is going to be playing that instrument, which was once a piano, and neither of these are exactly pianos anymore.
I use a lot of violin rods and powder in my fingers. See, that's actually a key ingredient to make a good sound. Thank you.
Thank you.
got you. Today we were talking about putting pianos on gondolas in Venice. I mean, so we're not out of the woods yet, but but we really want to try to create more situations for interactive music community, and that's what's really exciting to us right now.
Have you made any recordings?
Oh, we did one the other day, kind of. Yeah.
You recorded this.
Cortez, some of my friends are here, Ander Meyer and Michael Garcia from Cuba Libre. Yes, we record a lot. We just don't do CDs anymore. We just figure we're not rock stars. We just record for us to listen back. But yeah, there is. If you go online, you'll see a lot of material there. We just don't try to make any, you know, recordings for sale or anything like that. At least I'm not.
We might do some stuff with this.
Yeah. Phil?
Can you describe your, you know, your experience in first deconstructing a piano? I mean, how did you originally come up with this notion?
You know, it's funny. I play piano. I studied piano when I was a kid. However, I don't improvise with a keyboard. And as a creative person, as an artist, I always felt a bit frustrated. I put, like, Jesus, 15 years studying piano, and I cannot improvise. I had to read music. So one day I was in San Francisco. I've been doing this for over 3 years. I had an upright piano like that, and I cleaned it up. I was removing the keys just to clean the inside and the action. And I started plucking the strings. I had a phone on top of it and calling a friend and plucking the strings. And I never put it back. I found it much more amazing. And I was very young and I was kind of aggressive at the time. I would play with hammers and pliers. And every time I did a show, I would waste a piano. So I had to go and get me another. Eventually, I developed tools like corks and fiberglass and little things that allowed me to play and not detune the piano. But for many, many years, for 3 years, I play with my friends upright pianos. And just recently, about a year ago, I had a grand piano. This is the first time I take a grand piano apart. And if you look at this closer, there's a main steel frame beam here that I cut with a hacksaw. I got that out of the way. So that's part of the liberation process. The keys are gone. The reason I did that, because I play upright pianos for many years, and between the bass and the strings, there's never steel. So I had to do that in order to play a grand piano, remove that, which a technician friend of mine told me, if you do that, the whole piano might collapse, the tuning would not hold. But it did not happen. There is so much steel in the construction of a piano that is still holding the tuning really well. That's another interesting thing about the piano. Dean and I are both piano players, and we love the instrument, not only for the music they produce, for the community that it builds around, but the beauty of the instrument itself, the wood part, the mechanics that go into the thing, the craft, the guild. And that's something that we like to continue to see happening with so much technology and digital instruments nowadays. The amazing, I mean, look at the piano, look at the inside of the piano. It's just, it takes 100 people to build one piano. And
there was a day, like you saw a little bit of it there in the film clip. I spent a whole day just doing nothing but lining up shots of the beautiful parts inside a piano. There's so much sculpture inside a thing like this. It's just an amazing thing. And there's such a concentration of craft. Each one of these keys, just to do that, there's about 30 parts working. And there's no lubrication. There's no. It's all wood and felt and metal. And it's like this amazing thing somebody invented, this machine. And the thing I like to say a lot is that, you know, you reach in your pocket and you pull out this gizmo, you know, and it like that, or like any little modern device, and it does like 10,000 things in this little tiny package. This thing weighs 600 pounds, and it only does one thing, and it takes up a huge amount of space in your living room. It's a completely archaic, ridiculous machine, but there's nothing else that does what this thing can do, and so we like to celebrate the fact that even though technology is happening kind of full on and everybody goes out and buys the latest thing, or if they're someone who does coding, you know, they come up with a way to get from point A to point B. There's a lot of amazing things about technology these days. But we also have choices about what we can retain from the past and good things that we can draw from the past and things we can save as we go into a digital future. And so a lot of what we're about as Sunset Piano is you can make that choice. You don't have to get rid of that old chair that has all those great marks on it and stuff, and that maybe you've had for 20 years. That's a perfectly great chair.
Don't go to IKEA and buy another one.
Don't go to IKEA and buy a new chair just because you think that's an old chair. I mean, someone might come over and really love that chair.
You know, we also feel the pianos have souls. I mean, most of these pianos, some of them are 100 years old. So you can imagine what happened with their instrument 100 years. The celebrations, the birthdays, the gatherings, the things that happen around a piano that brought family and friends together. And to see him actually taken to a dump and just discarded like garbage is hard for
and
us.
And sometimes it's hard. I mean, like, one thing that we noticed a lot is when we were doing flower piano in botanical gardens, a lot of the people that came to play our piano said, I only have a digital piano at home. I have a digital keyboard. You know, I live in an apartment this big. I live in San Francisco. I live in an apartment this big, and it's barely room for my clothes and my digital keyboard. And, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking because they want this. They want an old, screwed up, terrible old piano. But it's because it's more satisfying. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the people that lined up to play our pianos in the park, I would ask them, I said, you know, you're an incredible player. You know, you obviously know what you're doing. Do you have a piano at home? Most of the people said, no. Mm-hmm. I don't have a real piano. Or some people didn't have even a keyboard. They would go somewhere like San Francisco State or there you go for their piano lessons. They have a keyboard there. It's amazing, you know. And so having a thing like this that has history and soul and craft in it, it's something to be revered and cherished.
And one more time, when the pianos don't work in the physical, you know, the keyboard is gone, the action is sold, and don't throw it away. Take it apart. Play the insides and go beyond the 13th tone.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Because we're wrapping it up. No, we got 5 more minutes.
We got 5 minutes.
Yeah. Come on, the questions I told my friends to ask. No way.
Where can we hear regular live performances in this style?
In this style?
In Half Moon Bay.
Book us.
You know, this is the kind of music that I wouldn't say is not for a party. It's just kind of industrial.
Well, it could be. You don't know what kind of party he throws.
Yeah. But I have a studio that I have from Bay, a large space where we have 40 or 50 pianos. And sometimes there's 6 or 8 of us playing different pianos. We have a whole circle of pianos.
And we do have events sometimes. If you go to our website, this is not a plug, this is to answer your question, but it's also a plug. If you go to sunsetpiano.com, yeah. We always post when we have any kind of event, whether it's a new music kind of event or a more traditional kind of event. We have a whole stable of amazing... Stable? I don't know if that's right. We know a bunch of amazing musicians, and they come and they play for us. There's a couple in this room that will blow your mind. And they play everything from traditional classical music like Chopin and Debussy to jazz and improvisation. And I think we're going to be expanding into playing these instruments more and more now. But if you go to the website, we've also got a Facebook group that you can sign on to, and that's probably the best way to know what we're doing.
Sabrina.
Do you work with a piano tuner?
Oh, yes. We forgot to mention a dear friend of us.
What do you mean? This wasn't in tune?
Robert Soper, which is an old friend of mine. I've been playing music with him for 30 years. He studied in Berklee School of Music. He's a jazz guitar player. Also a piano player and a piano tuner and a technician. And in our friendship through the 3 years, that's how I learned how to take pianos apart without breaking them. I don't put them back together, but I learned how to take them apart gently. His name is Robert Soper. He's in Berklee, and he actually, when we did the flower pianos, he came almost every day.
He kept the pianos alive.
Because to have pianos outdoors in an environment which, you know, it's kind of wet, it was challenging. But yes, piano tuners are, yes.
They're critical to us. Conditionally, yes. We're being more and more specific about the pianos we accept. We have a lot of pianos,
and
the pianos do wear down. Given, you know, we take them outside; it's not their natural environment. But if someone has a piano that's in good shape and has been maintained, definitely let us know.
We're actually looking for grand pianos mostly lately, but Yes, Michael.
Well, grand pianos and spinets also. Uprights, like you saw us moving a lot of uprights in the film. like
they
this.
They weigh that tone.
They're actually the hardest pianos to move, so we've learned that those aren't the ones we want to be collecting right now. So we like small grands and spinets.
Steinway is preferable. Oh.
Mason and Hamlin is good, too.
So, Amato and Dean, what can we do to help you get to the Great Wall of China? Can you start a petition?
You know, it's,
sign it?
Thank you. It is kind of a wild idea. I mean, I actually visited my friend Phil and Linda a couple of months ago, and we went to visit the Chinese Wall. You know, to be honest, I wouldn't know what to say, had to ask. But we eventually come up with a proposal and see the proper channels.
You got 2,000 signatures or something and put it on Facebook.
More than that, it's just bureaucracy in China, having to know people there and, you know, having events like this and having more exposure and a background of things that we have done. But definitely
if
we
know
need,
people, let
yeah.
us know.
Yeah.
Well, good luck.
Thank you. Thank you. Brian, last question of the night. We got to go drink. No, I'm kidding.
Brian Gogan, you get the last question.
Have you considered taking any of the open pianos out onto a boat and playing to the whales as they're migrating by Half Moon Bay?
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, actually, you know, when I did the first event, and actually when we did the 12 pianos, a couple of times people said, well, who are you playing for? There was nobody around. We play for whales and dolphins, and they did. I wouldn't say they came. They were there. We actually, one scene in the film that Dean is working on, hopefully we get to do it, is taking this piano out in a boat and play for whales, which, I don't know if everybody knows, but to play music for whales is against the law. You cannot do
Thanks
that.
Thanks to Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You cannot play music for whales. Go figure. We're going to break the law once again and perhaps
okay,
do it.
Okay
don't tell anybody.
It's okay for the Navy to drop, you know, yeah. death charges on them, but for us to go out and play music to them is illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, yeah.
So we might do that. It takes some of the work to, you know, put the piano on a boat and, yeah, Piper?
We're working on it.
Well, thank you so much. I think that wraps the program. Thank you all for coming on a Friday
thank
evening.
You, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now on yourself.
I don't know. One more plug for Dean and Mauro. There are posters. There are our posters, the blue posters that have the upcoming programs throughout the month. But there's also frame-worthy posters. I guess around this table here for cash purchase of $5 to the artists, and they're quite beautiful. If you want to pick one up.
Thank you. One more time.